well-known institute and to discuss about some idea of Marcovianity with many illustrious participants and the young people who are here. I wanted to do a survey of quantum Marcovianity. It's a field which is now being developing for about more than 30 years, and a lot of material has been accumulated, so I will by far not be complete. So I had to choose, and I decided to give emphasis to what I consider the most important open problem now, which is the transition from processes to fields. This problem is very difficult also in the classical case, but as we will see, in the quantum case there are additional difficulties but also additional possibilities. Okay, so let me begin to, since not everybody, I postulate that not everybody is familiar with the notion of Marcovianity, I begin with the simplest notion of Marcovianity, which is what is called expected Marcovianity. It corresponds to the following situation. You have a star algebra, and you have three star algebras, subalgebras of A, with the property that one of them is in the intersection of the two. Intuitively, you can think of one algebra, let us say to fix the ideas, AI, as the algebra correspond to the past. In the stochastic processes, is the past. In the statistical mechanics, I is a multidimensional volume, and AI corresponds to the interior of the volume. And A prime is, roughly speaking, the exterior, the complement, but not exactly the complement. It's the complement of the interior. So that the intersection of the two sets is the boundary. And, of course, this is one example. But we will be very much interested in many different situations in which, for example, the I prime and di are subsets of discrete sets. In this case, the notion of boundary has to be defined in a more specific and inspecific way. So independently of the interpretation, you have three algebras, and on each of them you have a Umegaki conditional expectation onto, which is surjective. I don't give the definition. I suppose that everybody is familiar with the notion of Umegaki conditional expectation. Roughly speaking, is like a state in which the range behaves like the scalars. We require that the following projectivity condition is satisfied. That if I first project on the larger set, remember that delta I is in the intersection of the I and A prime. So the set I is larger than the algebra corresponding to I is larger than the algebra corresponding to the boundary. So if I first project on the larger algebra and then on the smaller one, this is the same as directly projecting on the smaller one. This condition is called projectivity of the conditional expectations. Now, the point is that if you have Umegaki conditional expectations, the following four properties are equivalent. You see, the first is the classical Markov property. So what does it, this vertical bar means restriction. So what does it mean? It means, if you give the standard interpretation in terms of past and future, if I consider an observable localized on the future and I project on the past, I obtain something which is in fact localized on the present. And in fact, even more, this is the second one, I obtain the same result that I would have obtained by projecting on the present. The second is what I said before. If I project an observable localized on the future, on the past, I obtain something localized on the present. The third one is more symmetric, is that the famous conditional independence, that if you take an observable localized on the past and one localized on the future, then conditionally on the present, the two are independent. And the remaining two ones are the symmetric formulation in which past and future are exchanged. So the remaining two is exactly the same as the first one, but past and future are exchanged. And the theorem is that if the conditional expectation on the present is faithful, all these four conditions are equivalent. So you see that in the Markovianity, you have an intrinsic symmetry of the notion between an intrinsic symmetry between past and future, interior and exterior, because of this equivalence. If the conditional expectation on the present is not faithful, then almost the equivalence is almost the same, except that the conditional independence is implied by any of the two asymmetric properties. And if conditional independence hold, essentially the other two properties hold on the support of the conditional expectation. This means, this is the explicit form, essentially it means that the identity holds on the support of the conditional expectation. Now, there is an important connection between Markovianity and factorizability, and since in this conference, particular role will be played by product systems, and not only of Hilbert spaces, but also of modules, I want to emphasize this important connection. Because, first of all, let me recall what is a factorizable system of conditional expectation. A factorizable system of conditional expectation is defined by, you see, now, before you could think of three abstract algebras, but now we need a set. And we need that the algebras are indexed by set, so they are local algebras in the terminology, which is now very well established. They are isotonic, like every family of local algebras that we use. Now, the fundamental point is that if you have a family of conditional expectations, you call it factorizable if this property is true. Okay? So, if the weaker property, if this property is true only when I is contained in J, then this intersection is reduced to I, and you find what is called projectivity. Projectivity is enormously weaker than factorizability. Factorizability essentially means independent increment in probabilistic interpretation. Projectivity in classical probability is absolutely universal. Every family of conditional expectation is projective if it is deduced from a single state. And now it's clear that factorizability implies projectivity by definition, essentially, because it's a particular case. It's also clear, but let us see why, that factorizability implies Markovianity. Markovianity, I don't give a general proof, because as I said, in order to specify what Markovianity means, you must specify this boundary operator. What does it mean, boundary? So let us take the boundary in the usual sense of topological space. In this case, it's the simplest situation. So here, we take X to be a topological space, and the boundary is the usual meaning. Now, the I prime as I said, is the complement of the interior, so that it contains the boundary. You see, these are called intuitionistic sets. They are sets such that the closure of the interior coincides with the interior of the closure. They are called intuitionistic because the Boolean algebra is used to model intuitionistic logic. And then you see, if you have that EI, if you take the expectation on the past of an observable on the future, since it is on the future, it is identical, the projection E on the future acts as the identity, and then you use factorizability, but by my definition of boundary, which is the usual topological one, this is the conditional expectation on the boundary. So it is clear that factorizability implies Markovianity. As I said, it is much stronger. However, what is done very frequently, practically always, you could say, in probability theory, is this. Start from a factorizable system and use a local perturbation of a factorizable system. Then you obtain a Markov system. So Markov systems are constructed as local perturbations of factorizable systems of conditional expectation. So, again, what does it mean, local perturbation? Local perturbation can mean many things, but I will again explain myself by the simplest example. Take an operator, take a map which has this form. I associate to any subset of the topological space, which is the index set, for example, time. I associate an operator which is in the closure of I. This closure is very important in the discrete case, typically in the continuous case. In the examples, we will see a lot of examples. The algebra on the closure of a set coincides with the algebra on the set itself. So this is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to find non-trivial examples in the continuous case. And then you want this property. This is very, very strong, much stronger than is used in practice. Of course, you see, from the right-hand side, you see that this implies commutativity of the M. In fact, in the discrete case, you can, by giving a little bit more complicated definition of what is a multiplicative functional, you avoid this commutativity. And then you have this property, which is important in this, called the conditional amplitude. Essentially, this is the definition of what is called the conditional amplitude for the given set of conditional expectations. You see, the zero index, roughly speaking, means that I start from E0, like a free. Intuitively, I want to perturb something free, something factorizable, to obtain something non-factorizable but Markovian. So index 0 refers to the factorizable system. For example, a typical case when this property is automatically satisfied is when MI is an isometry. In this case, you know that the conditional expectation preserves identity, so this condition is trivially satisfied. And this where the cases where M are isometry are particularly important in the construction of Markov chains and in their applications. And the point is that under these conditions, it's very easy to check that this limit exists. This kind of limit is a limit that is very much studied in statistical mechanics. MI is called Gibbs factor. Multiplicative functions are essentially Gibbs factors, or a Katz perturbation. This in the one-dimensional case, this will reduce to the Feynman-Katz formula. Okay. So, roughly speaking, this is the landscape with expected Markovianity, the theory is very nice, very elegant. However, it is an important point, an important limitation. In the commutative case, the theory works perfectly. But in the extreme non-commutative case, when all algebras involved are factors, you have a new phenomenon, completely new with respect to the commutative case, arises, namely that if a state is compatible, you need some assumption. I am thinking, for example, the typical assumption, I'm thinking now to a factorizable system in the usual sense, and even more concretely, I'm thinking to the discrete version of factorizable system, for example, infinite tensor products of matrix algebras. In this case, they are all factors, and in this case, you prove that if a state is compatible to a family of Markovian condition and expectation, necessarily this state is a product state. So this is shows that if you want to build an interesting theory of Markov states in von Neumann algebras, you must go beyond conditional expectation, because the importance of Markov states is that they are the only class of states in classical probability, well, we could say beyond the Gaussian states. The Gaussian states and the Markov states are the only two classes of measures on infinite dimensional spaces on which we have a complete constructive control, which, in the sense that we can describe explicitly the finite dimensional joint correlation in terms of explicit operators which involve only finitely many variables, not limits. Now, if you want, we would like to have something similar for von Neumann algebras. So that is why we must go beyond the notion of the usual Umagaki conditional expectation. One generalization, one possible generalization is the notion of quasi-conditional expectation. If you analyze the standard reason, the elementary argument which shows you that any state compatible with a conditional expectation in the classical case which satisfies the Markov property must be a product state, you see that the problem comes from the fact that Umagaki conditional expectation have a huge fixed point set. So if you want to keep a non-triviality and nevertheless avoid the pathology coming from extreme non-commutativity, you might weaken a little bit the notion of conditional expectation. And this is you weaken by what is called quasi-conditional expectation, which involves a triple. So what is a quasi-conditional expectation? I have a map from aj into ai, but the fixed point is not the range AI, but the smaller algebra AI0. Okay? So this is a way to guarantee that we have still a large set of fixed points, but not too large to avoid paradoxes. And the paradoxes come, you see, here is where non-commutativity plays the fundamental role. This is a very simple remark. I stated it in the formal way as a lemma. You see, that if you have a quasi-conditional expectation, then the image of the relative commutant of the fixed point algebra with respect to the largest algebra A is contained in the relative commutant of the fixed point algebra and B, because B is the range. So you see that if B is a factor and you have a Umagaki conditional expectation in which B0 is equal to B, this must be trivial, and then you get a product. Okay? So this is why we introduce this generalization. Let me show you how this works in the one-dimensional case. which was the beginning many years ago in 1974. And let us consider a family of a sequence of Hilbert spaces. It's very important the for physics, the case in which all the Hilbert spaces are the same and you have an homogeneous lattice is extremely important. But if you want to be prepared to the multidimensional generalization, it's essential to think of what in probability is called the non-homogeneous case, in which at every site of the lattice, in this case n, you have a Hilbert space which can be completely different site to site. So I just fix my notations. I call jn, small jn, the canonical standard embedding, just adding identities. So this product is simply a shorthand notation for this. In tensor product with all one at the end. And then I use another notation. I define AN to be the algebra. Let us interpret N as a time to fix our idea intuitively. So N will be the time, AN will be the present, and I call A with the square root, this is a square bracket, the past, and this is the future. As you see, both past and future contain present in my definition. The shift is defined only in the homogeneous case. In this case, it makes sense to speak of translation invariant states. And translation invariants are exactly those states which are invariant under the shift. Okay, now let us particularize the notion of quasi-conditional expectation to the case we are interested in. The case is where we consider this is the past. Not yet the future. The future will be this one. But these are the three algebras that we will consider in the definition of quasi-conditional expectation. And we define it to be Markovian if this property is satisfied. Okay? Now, from the lemma on the commutant, this property is automatic in the infinite tensor product case. So, but this is due to the extreme non-commutativity. If you are in the classical case, this is by far not true, because it's obvious that not every otherwise every process would be Markovian. Okay? But in the factor case, this is a corollary. In the infinite tensor product case, this follows from the condition that the fixed point of this map is this algebra because of the commutant lemma. And then I give my notion of Markov state. See, important point is this. I say it's just the usual, a classical Markov state is a state which is invariant under a family of Markovian conditional expectation. In this case, by using the uniqueness of the conditional expectation invariant under a state up to set of measure zero, you prove that this condition, in the classical case, they must be the conditional expectation canonically associated to the state. But you can give this the definition in more generality by simply requiring that there exists a family of conditional expectation which is invariant under the state. Remember, quasi-conditional expectation means that it maps 0n plus 1 into 0n, and the past algebra is the fixed point of this map. This is the crucial property. So I want to attract your attention to the fact that I use the term Markov state, not Markov chain. I would reserve the term Markov chain for another class of states that will be introduced in a moment, and you will understand why this very apparently artificial distinction. So let us, first of all, deduce the structure of Markov states. The structure is very easy. consider this completely positive map. It is composed by homomorphism and Umegaki condition expectation, so it's completely positive. And it goes from the algebra n plus 1, so the one step present future to present. Now, exploit the invariance condition. The fact that the past is in the fixed point of this in this completely positive map. So, if you have an arbitrary operator on the past and then a product on the future, you can bring it out by definition of quasi-conditional expectation from the expectation. You use the invariance property. You bring out from the conditioning and you form the transition operator. Now, if you iterate this, this is equal. You can add a Jn plus 2 here, acting on the identity, and you will find this formula. Please keep in mind, because this identity will be at the basis of the difference between Markov states and Markov chains. Okay? So, if we iterate this procedure of taking out the fixed points and reducing to pair correlations, we arrive to the fact that the joint correlation of a product of n observables is expressed in terms of pairs. You see? So, what does it mean? This is the fundamental. This is an analog of a fundamental property of classical Markov chains. You remember in my introduction, I said that the advantage of quantum of classical Markov chains with respect to standard measures is that you reduce the joint correlations to finite-dimensional explicitly computable objects. And what are the explicitly computable objects? This is phi0 and En. So maybe I can write here. Phi0 is a state on the algebra at time 0. So if we are in matrix algebras, this is, for example, MD. This state is a D by D matrix. What is En? En is a completely positive, identity-preserving map . So again, in the homogeneous matrix case, this is a completely positive identity presenting map from MD to the matrix itself. Okay? And the Markov process is uniquely determined, the infinite dimensional state is uniquely determined by this finite dimensional object. Now, an interesting and important difference between classical and I want to do a small digression here, because this was a problem that has been behind me for many, many, many years. There is a big difference here between classical and quantum case. What is the analog of this formula in the classical case? In the classical case, you have a single Markov operator, P, which goes from bn plus 1 to bn, depending on n in the non-homogeneous case. And the connection between this E and the classical, of course, the classical theory is embedded into the quantum. You find it back. When you find it back? When you define this formula. You see, Pn brings Bn plus 1, the future, in the present. And then you couple by multiplication. But of course, in the non-commutative case, even if these two objects are positive, this will not be positive. That is why in the quantum case you need this more complicated object. And I was thinking for many years why we cannot reduce everything to a single. And just a few years ago, a very trivial remark came to my mind, and namely that this is non-positive because I am using standard matrix multiplication. But suppose I use a sure multiplication. Then we know the sure multiplication of two positive matrices is positive. So if I fix a basis, I put sure multiplication, and then it is a simple exercise to prove and verify that sure multiplication is not only positive, but completely positive. It's more than positive. So sure multiplication can be a transition expectation. And so with Fidaleo, in a paper appeared a couple of years ago, we constructed the Markov chains corresponding to this fact. This corresponds to a lifting of the classical chain, and it is very interesting. It related to some problems of contemporary information theory with the notion of entanglement. I will have no time to discuss this development, but I want to formulate this point to essentially emphasize the difference between the classic construction of classical and quantum Markov objects. So now let us go to okay, now we have proved that given a quantum Markov chain, a Markov state in my definition, I can uniquely define a pair of transition expectations and an initial state. This is wrong. Phi zero should be comma here. An initial state and the sequence of conditional expectations. And the sequence of conditional expectations. And you may ask yourself, is it true that the converse of this is true? In the classical theory of Markov chains, the theorem goes both ways. If you start with a Markov operator, you associate a pair given by the initial state and the sequences of transition operators. And conversely, you go back. Given any such a pair, you construct a unique classical Markov chain. Now, the problem is that the reconstruction theorem also goes back, also goes the other way around. That you reconstruct one state, if you take this formula as a definition, I am not able. This formula. If you take this formula, the right hand side of this formula, as a definition of the left hand side, is not difficult to prove that since the OHEN is identity preserving, you get a projective family of states on the infinite tensor product. And it is well known that this gives a unique state. So any pair of transition expectations and gives you a Markov, it gives you a sum state. But the problem is this state that I define in this way, a quantum Markov state, there are obstructions. And the obstruction is this invariance property here. If you look in more detail to this invariance property, you see a kind of similar to Young-Basser equation. There is a compatibility condition, roughly speaking, that must be satisfied. Now, it turns out that In most important application to physics, now many of these applications are known, this condition is not satisfied. So this was the original problem. We have a class with a nice operator theoretical characterization, which is the quantum Markov states. And then you try to do the converse, and you build up by hands a class which has a very nice local structure, because you simply, everything is constructive. And it has the additional value of having a lot of physical applications, as it was discovered after. But now you have no nice operator theoretical characterization of this constructive class. And this is what I called, this class I called the Now, before going to the problem of, let me give you a more indication on, so why we have seen that Markov states and Markov chains are different classes. So what is the peculiar aspect of Markov states? And for them, we can give a structure theorem which is more refined than that one that I gave to you. And essentially, it goes into two steps. I see that my time is extremely short, so I will not arrive. I want to arrive to multidimensional. So I would like to arrive to the multidimensional case and the graph case. So I have to go a little bit higher, more. So what is the, let me go to the essential point of this theorem. So what is the point? Suppose that I have a completely positive map from the algebra A to the past, which enjoys the Markov property and which contains the almost the past, the open past. The past excluded the present in the fixed points. Then, you see, we are, in some sense, we are back to Omegaki conditional expectation, but in a different context. Then, there exists an algebra, a subalgebra in the present, and the Omegaki conditional expectation onto the past union this algebra. So you see, you begin to, this is a very nice structure in which you see that the present in some sense splits the algebra on the present, in the present, splits into two parts, an algebra present but connected with the past, and another algebra present but connected with the future. This is implicit in the definition. This is a nice discovery due to Carlo Cecchini, and essentially this is the first step. Here we discover that we find the algebra of the past. But now what is the advantage? The advantage is that we have for this larger algebra on this larger algebra, that is the proper past plus a part of the present algebra, now we have a Omegaki conditional expectation. So we can use the very nice properties of these operators. The proof of this is very simple. This is a remark we did with Alberto Frigerio several years ago in a paper in 1982, that because of the invariance property, if the state phi is invariant under a completely positive map, obviously it is invariant under any power of this completely positive map. And if this is in the fixed point of a completely positive map, it will be in the fixed point of any power. So I can replace here, not only, I can use not only the conditional expectation, but its ergodic mean. So I can go to GNS representation, use a standard ergodic theorem in for Neumann algebras, and we construct the Umegaki conditional expectation as the ergodic limit of the quasi-conditional expectation. Okay, and now the important point of Cecchini, I give you only the idea, and only in a very special case. Cecchini's theorem is much more general. You can look at it, the final form, it appeared in many years, and but the final form which covers any for Neumann algebra is in the last issue of IDA, infinite dimensional analysis and quantum probability. I will give you a popular version because I would like to give to transmit to you the main idea of the proof. Of course, there are many technicalities, but what is the main idea? In the main idea, let us consider the some extremal case, a very particular case, but we will see it is essentially it is a characterization of the extremal case when this subalgebra, this subalgebra of the present connected with the past is a factor itself. Okay, so, and let us even specialize even more that all the algebras AN are matrix algebra. So the commutant is also a factor. Relative commutant will also be the commutant of a matrix algebra inside a matrix algebra. And we have this structure now that the algebra of the present, as I wrote on the blackboard, is split as generated by one part interacting with the past and one part interacting with the future. Now, what is the point? You remember that we said the Umegaki conditional expectation, we want to go beyond Umegaki conditional expectation because Umegaki conditional expectation are compatible only with product factor. Okay, but product is a notion which depends on the localization. You can have something which is a product in one localization and not a product in other localization. In probability, these objects were known. They were called two block factors. So what is the situation like here? You have a lattice, say one-dimensional lattice. At each point of the lattice, you have an algebra A, AN, which is the algebra associated to this point. Now, this algebra has two subalgebra, A, this is N minus 1, and this is N plus 1. So, and you have this situation for each point of the lattice. Okay, so this is AN of the past, and this is AN of the future. And this is A n minus 1 of the future and A n minus 1 of the past. So what happens is that the state will couple this and this, this and this, this and this, and so on. You see? So these states are, if you write the each algebra AN is identified to the product of AN past times AN future. So the full tensor product, will be identified to the full tensor product, of course, of this AN past times AN future. But by associativity, I can also identify this too. The full tensor product of AN future times AN plus 1 past. If you count, you see that each of these factors enters exactly once. Now, a product state on this localization will be an extremal, I will explain, Markov states in this localization. Now, these were known in probability theory. They are called two block factors. But it happens, and it's very strange, that I mentioned that these Markov chains have found very interesting application in physics. And there were a series of papers by Farnes and Nachtigall and Werner that developed this theory, applying it to a special class of spin lattices called valence bond states. Now, it happens that the valence bond states have exactly this structure. So this kind of object not only appear naturally in classical probability, but also appear in quantum physics and in quantum probability. So, you see, I said extremal now. Why? Because, of course, I am assuming it is a factor. If it is not a factor, what you do? You decompose over the center. Of course, it's a little bit you have to take, since we are working, Cecchini has the completely general case. We are working in matrix algebra. We simply take a discrete set of atomic projections generating the center, and we have an abelian algebra. The abelian algebra gives a stochastic process, and what is rather interesting that you can prove is that this is a Markov process, a classical Markov process. So essentially, what is the result? If you have a quantum Markov state, you define this idea of quantum two-block factors. Any Markov state, any quantum Markov state on B, let us say, to fix our ideas on B of H, for more for Neumann algebra, you should check this result by Carlo Cecchini. Any quantum Markov state is a convex combination of two-block factors for appropriate subalgebras, for appropriate splitting of these algebras, and the mixing measure is a Markov, classical Markov measure. Okay? So, you see, this is the Cecchini theorem. How much time is it? 10, thank you. Okay, so now I want to pass now. But there is a page down on this computer, page down. Okay. I want now to pass to a development, okay, which is this. Now, I spoke in my introduction that all this was preliminary. What I said is a survey of what was known some years ago. Now, how can we use this to go further? We want to build Markov chains on arbitrary, Markov fields on arbitrary graphs. So, what we do, instead of the one-dimensional lattice like this, we take an arbitrary graph, and to each point of the graph we associate a Hilbert space like a bundle. This is a free bundle, and then we form the finite volume algebras by taking the tensor product Hilbert space and the operator corresponding operator algebras. The embeddings are the usual ones. And now, let me try to define. What I want to do is this. I want to produce a notion of Markov field, which is the multidimensional analog of the one-dimensional Markov chains. So, I will proceed constructively. I will try to build the analog of the quantum Markov chains. So, not requiring a priori the compatibility condition with the resulting quasi-conditional expectation. I don't require invariance, but I want to construct these objects. And you will see this will be related very much to the geometry of the graph. In fact, we have difficulty with loops, and by strange reasons, this turns out to be related to entanglement. We can overcome the difficulty if we take the maximally entangled coupling. But I will try to explain why. First of all, let me try to explain what will be the closure, because now I am in a discrete set, so I have to give you a notion of boundary. I is a family of subsets of the vertices of the graph. The graph is made by vertices and edges. And I is a family of subsets, for example, the finite subset. This is our typical example. Okay? Now, the D is, roughly speaking, the operator, an operator that is an axiomatic version of the range of the interaction. If you know a little bit of the Brushing theory, which is the inspiring theory behind all our work in this field, you know that there is a finite range potential. And this map, which map finite sets into finite sets, and roughly speaking, this is this idea, intuitive idea is this. I have a set, and the subset is DF. Okay? Now, roughly speaking, this is, imagine D is the range of the interaction, and the particles that are on the boundary will not feel the interaction with the particles which are inside this set. So you can begin to have the intuition that in the corresponding local algebras, this will correspond to the fixed point algebra of the quasi-conditional expectation. So, okay, I have some technical conditions. I don't pretend to express everything here. The Markov property, as formulated here, is this. If I have a large set and I project into a small set, okay, I am interested in what happens to the analog of the future, which is this circular crown, okay, and the idea is that this crown here will not invade all the volume, but it will be also confined in an inner crown. So you see, in the continuum limit, you will have really the boundary. Okay. Now I have a definition of Markov chain, which is, if you don't mind, I skip because it is long, and I would prefer to give you examples. So, let me give you the constructive example. We work now in the okay. For us, only important notion will be we will particularize all these things in terms of this D operator will be replaced by the external boundary. External boundary means, roughly speaking, this. In every point of a graph has its nearest neighbors. If I have a point in G, I will call the external boundary of G the set of all points which do not belong to G, but which are nearest neighbors to some point of G. Okay? And I will work on a very special kind of grass, the trees. Things like this, binary tree, for example. They have a very important geometrical structure, which will be fundamental for us, and this is the following. If I have a point in the external boundary, so take the tree as the layers, and you can consider the layers of a tree. Now take any point in any layer of the tree, and take any point in the external boundary of a tree. The point is that this point X will have a unique point X in the set, in the finite set lambda, which is its own nearest neighbor. This is the property, fundamental property that will make life easier. Now, we want to show that we take an amplitude matrix. Remember, in probability theory, you have probabilities. In quantum mechanics, you have amplitudes. And you have a matrix which is an amplitude which is bistochastic. And we want to associate to this matrix a state on the tree. So you see, if the tree, by the way, here I take a tree with the D branches at most, but D must be finite. You will see why. This has to do with maximal entanglement, because I will, the Hilbert space H at any point X will be isomorphic to CD, and the maximally, if I have I fix a basis into this Hilbert space EJ of X, and the maximally entangled state is by definition the sum over the EJ over all J normalized, you see. And of course this doesn't exist in infinite dimension. You have to use a weight and the theory becomes a little bit more complicated. Okay, and now let us give our definition. Intuitively, this psi is a wave function. This is the mathematical translation of a construction which was proposed by the Nobel Prize Anderson many years ago. But this is a rigorous formulation. His idea was that he had in such a volume many particles, and randomly these particles were bound by pairs. And each pair, if XY is the particle can be in many states, D states. The states, the orthonormal basis corresponds to the state of the particle, and the wave function is corresponding, which pairs EIJ, it gives the amplitude that pair particle X in state I will pair to particle J, particle Y in state J. Then you have a finite volume, and you will take the product of all pairs. But the pairs are edges of the graph. And I take only the product on the edges of the graph. The tree is convenient because it has no loop. You will see there are difficulties with loop. Now, why the tree is important? The tree is important because we prove that this kind of collective wave function, which is a vector in the Hilbert space, omega is a configuration corresponding to these indices. Okay. So is a map omega from lambda to the state space, and D is the dimension of the Hilbert space, which is supposed to be the same for each fiber. So the point is that if you add one point, because of the absence of loops, you keep the norm. Let me arrive to the theorem without any attempt of proof. Okay, now, remember, I don't pretend to give all precise definition. The idea is this. You have this bunch of one vector of Hilbert space for every pair. Then you take the tensor product of all these vectors corresponding to all the edges, and you form a huge vector on the finite volume state lambda. Then you consider expectation value and you go to the infinite volume limit. Because of the tree property and this very special geometric property, the T property that I mentioned, this limit stabilizes. And there exists a unique state which has this property. And now we want to prove in what sense this is a Markov state. Intuitively, it's by construction. You see, why by construction? Because I have taken these vectors psi lambda here are obtained as tensor product vectors corresponding to edges, and the edges correspond only to nearest neighbors. So if I have a point on the boundary, the only points that it can interact, remember, there is the only edges correspond to nearest neighbors. So this limit, why it will stabilize? It will stabilize if I am if the observable A is localized in some volume, lambda 0, let us say, when lambda becomes very large, it will stabilize on the so-called external closure of lambda, which means lambda 0 union the external boundary of lambda 0. And it stabilizes. It's the same phenomena that happens in one dimension. Okay? And now you can wonder, can you do this in more dimensions? Okay, this is my last statement. In more dimensions, we can do, but for some strange reason, and we are trying to understand the geometrical origin of these regions, for this reason, we can do only if these vectors have the following components. They are so-called. They are so-called related to what I could call complementary pairs. So essentially, the components of this vector up to a phase must be constant. So this is the. Remember, what is our philosophy? We want a single transition amplitude matrix. And we associate to a transition amplitude matrix a Markov field on a graph. If the graph is a tree, we can take an arbitrary amplitude matrix. If the graph is not a tree at the moment, we must have an amplitude matrix which corresponds to maximum indeterminacy. The probability is always uniform. It's 1 over t. Then we can do. And I want to point out that this construction uses some nice invariant of the graph, which is essentially the if you have a finite region lambda, there is a kind of analog of the Euler number for a polyhedron. It, roughly speaking, this is an invariant of the graph which corresponds to the number of vertices inside lambda minus the number of edges inside lambda. So since the number of edges from one vertex, roughly speaking, measures how much the graph is curved, negative index means a very contorted geometry. Okay. So, you see, I wanted to discuss. My survey has been very quick, unfortunately, particularly in the last part. And I omitted many interesting things, for example, the Fermi analog of this. Fermi analog was possibly only recently, because Araki and Moria developed a beautiful theory of product states on CAR algebra. So If you remember the philosophy that I was telling you at the beginning, that Markov states are local perturbations of product states. After the development of the theory of product states on CAR, you can study the perturbations. And some very non-trivial new phenomena appear. That is, while in the infinite tensor product case, if you have a quantum Markov state, it must be a convex combination of two block factors. So it is not so much quantum, because essentially it's still in a convex combination of some, in the closure of some product states. But in the Fermi case, there are Markov states which are not two block factors. So the Fermi structure really, even in the 2x2 standard CAR algebra. So the Fermi structure, the combination of Fermi and Markovian, is a field which deserves some further investigation. Okay, I think that the message is this: the Markovianity is the study of local statistical properties of states. Algebras in themselves are not enough. The Markovianity is an intrinsic property of the state. And like in the classical case, we want to study and essentially to construct non-trivial examples of this object. Okay, thank you.